listening to the GD Podcast, an informal but insightful conversation about sports, pop culture, beer, and the like. Follow us on Twitter at the GD Podcast and email us at the GD Podcast at gmail.com. Today we're going to recap last night's exciting NFL playoff action. We'll preview today's wild card games, recap some of the top bowl games in the college football season, and we'll close things out with Mike's Beer Blast. Joining us today is special guest and GD Podcast correspondent Dave Kaufman. Dave, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
Good, good. Thank you. Thanks for joining us today. We'll jump right into Saturday night's wild card games. The first one was excellent. Colts-Chiefs. Colts won by a point, even though they're down by down 38-10 early in the third quarter. So I guess with that kind of deficit, did you guys think that was more of a Chiefs collapse or a Colts comeback?
I guess it's some sort of combination of both. I mean, it was one of the games where you kind of get excited for the playoffs. You have it on, watching it, and then after the first quarter, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you just kind of have it on in the background because it was a blowout. And then, I mean, I guess I sort of pinned that more on the Colts. They just all of a sudden caught fire. They couldn't do anything wrong. So, I mean, I guess I give more kudos to the team that makes the comeback as opposed to Kansas City, who just sort of, you know, fluttered out.
Yeah, I think the Colts look like geniuses. I mean, they drafted Luck for a reason, and that was probably one of the first times you really saw why they have so much faith in him. And they've always said, you know, he's just got that confidence about him. No matter how far they're down, he always just believes that they can win. And that definitely came out yesterday, and it was pretty incredible to watch.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was more on the Colts, especially just considering the fact that I think when Charles went down for the Chiefs so early in the game, I thought that really injury came back to bite him in the end when they couldn't run the ball as much anymore and kill the clock. It kind of just kept the game open for the Colts to make that comeback.
Right. Yeah. I think in, you know, turnover wise, Luck threw, I think either two or three picks, and then they had a couple fumbles too. And Smith didn't throw any interceptions, I think they only had one fumble. So the turnover margin for the Colts, I mean, they got crushed in that area. It wasn't like Kansas City was coughing the ball up every drive. It was just Luck. You know, they were just bombing it out there in the second half, and everything was clicking for them.
Yeah, it was really just two different. I thought it was a tale of two different halves for the Colts. And I thought the Colts defense just really they stepped up big time in the second half. They just gave him a chance to come back. That was the key, I thought, because you're right. Smith played pretty much a perfect game. They just lost too many guys down the stretch.
Yeah, I feel bad for Charles. I mean, going out on the first drive of the playoffs, I mean, that's crushes your team morale. I mean, they, of course, it didn't seem to bother them in the first half, and then it just, I guess, sort of caught up to them, and they couldn't rely on that running game there.
Exactly. Yep, that's exactly, I think, what happened, too. Yep.
Yeah, that really sucks for him. I had watched an interview, too, and he was just talking about how excited he was for the year and how much he liked Andy Reid. He felt like he finally had a coach that was utilizing his skills. And that's like such a good year, and the team was doing so great. And then all of a sudden, it's just taken out from under you that quickly.
Yeah, because I mean, he was such an instrumental part of their offense. It wasn't like he was just, because a lot of teams, the running back's kind of an afterthought, but I think he really was the engine that that drove that team when they were on offense.
Yeah, absolutely. And like Dave said, Alex Smith had a really good game, too.
Absolutely. Yep, he really did.
I'm looking at the stats right now, and Smith was 30 of 46 for 378 and four touchdowns. I mean, that is a monster day by any standards.
Yeah, it was amazing there in the beginning, just how wide open some of those receivers were getting in the secondary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Because that's like Dave said, I was in the kind of the same boat when it was like, you know, 31-10 at halftime, and you kind of have the game on still, but it's like, oh boy, let's just get to the 8 o'clock game, you know. But yeah, it's amazing what you know, a little halftime adjustment, a few injuries, what a difference a game can make. And I thought that the game really changed when Brown's running in and he fumbles the ball, but it bounces right back up to Luck, and he's able to dive in to cut it to three. I thought if the Chiefs hop on that fumble, they'd probably win the game.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it's just kind of like, what can you do? If you're a Kansas City fan, you just, every single thing that can go right for the Colts was going right, and that was just the icing on the cake right there.
Yeah, that was pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, because after that, my God, well, the Colts have this now. If their defense can keep playing like this, they're good to go. Because when you get a bounce like that, you know that the tide is turning your favor.
Yeah, sometimes it's just your year. It made me think instantly of the Auburn kick return against Alabama. Like,
yes. Yep.
Sometimes it just seems like it's kind of destiny.
Yeah, absolutely. What did you guys think of Reed's kind of time management down the stretch? I know he got kind of. I know the broadcast kind of killed him for taking that timeout right after the 2 minute. They came out of 2 minute warning, took another timeout. Did you guys think the Chiefs could have managed the clock better, or they just kind of were playing the hand they were dealt there?
Yeah, that was bizarre. I get frustrated when coaches pull stuff like that. I mean, I understand there's a million things going on and all that, but you basically have a timeout at that point.
Yeah.
And then a free one, obviously. And then when that clock is running out where you got to get back on the field, and then you say, wait, we need more time. I mean, that's ludicrous. I don't understand how you don't have the guys in the booth or some coach on the sideline just basically telling you, hey, by the way, we need to run a play in 15 seconds or whatever the structure is. But that, I mean, that is just atrocious clock management.
Agreed, totally agreed. But like you said, you don't know what happened. They could have had an issue with a mic or something could happen on the sidelines that we have no clue about.
Yeah, because I don't know. Maybe they got to the line of scrimmage, didn't like the defense that was set up, say, audible out. It's just, a lot of things going on. But, yeah, I know when Reed was in Philly, that was one of his biggest criticisms was he wasn't the best game manager there. So I think that kind of probably played into the criticism he got, but. I just think that the fact that they lost two running backs just killed their chances of grinding the clock down when they had the lead still.
I mean, that's exactly what you need. You need a Jamal Charles in a situation like that. I mean, he's gonna get you 5-6 yards of carry and just be able to take away the clock. And they didn't have that at all. And that killed them.
Absolutely. And we won't know who the Colts play until the Bengals game this afternoon. But do you like their chances? Bet any better whether they play the Patriots or the Broncos next week?
Personally, I wouldn't want to stand in the way of the Broncos at this point. Yeah. I mean, I know the Patriots sort of just win in the playoffs, but I guess just going on recent this year, the Broncos just could just turn it up in any second.
Yeah, I agree. But back to that thing I said, when you get a freak play like that to let you win the game and you're down 4 touchdowns and come back to win, you just never know. They might just have that it factor, kind of like the Ravens were mediocre throughout the whole year last year and they end up winning the Super Bowl. So
yeah,
maybe the Colts are that team this year. You never know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think, both tasks will be tough. Either going to Denver or to New England will both be tough. I think, I don't know, the Broncos, I think they'd have a tough time keeping up with them offensively. But then the Patriots, though, like Dave said, they're just, they're good, especially at home. They're really good in the playoffs. But they seem always, the Patriots seem more vulnerable as the years go on.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this year I feel like they had a bunch of, especially in the beginning of the season, it was kind of like, how are the Patriots winning all these games? They had a lot of late comebacks. They had a lot of lucky breaks, a lot of bad calls called for them.
Yep.
And it just sort of seemed like they were racking up their wins based on not, the Patriots of yesteryear where they would just pick apart teams left and right. It seemed like this year they were sort of skimming by and just kind of getting lucky week to week.
Yeah, and it's just amazing to me how they keep on winning when they have those down years and they don't have a ton of star power. I mean, they have Tom Brady, but the rest of the team, there's like no huge names to jump out at your face.
Yeah, that really goes to show how good he is and how good of a coach Belichick is, that they've been able to still be a playoff contender year after year after year, no matter, it's like, as long as they have those two guys, they're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So the Colts, they have a tough task either way. And then the second game, Eagles-Saints, I have to admit, I kind of was a little bit down on the Saints because of the way they played on the road this year, especially outdoors. But they proved they were able to do it. And I think that was the first Saints road playoff win in their franchise history. So that was impressive. What did you guys take away from that game?
Oh, that was another nail-biter, too. I was surprised at half that it was only 6-7, expecting this crazy shootout.
Yep.
But the Saints defense played a lot better than I thought they would in the beginning. And it just seemed like the Eagles couldn't do anything. And being at home, I thought they would definitely come out on fire a little bit more.
Yeah, Breeze had a very non-Breeze type day. I mean, I'm looking at the stats. He had 250 yards, a touchdown, and two picks. To kind of counter that, Ingram had a really, I guess, kind of quietly good day. He had 18 carries for 97 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah.
And, I mean, kind of going back to the opposite of what Mike just said about the Patriots, it seems like the Saints have a gajillion names on offense, and yep. They can just depends, kind of like the Broncos, just whatever guy's going to blow up that day is going to blow up. And personally, as a fan, I'm happy that the Eagles lost on a last-second field goal just because I think Philly fans are the worst in all of sports. So that kind of made me happy, but I mean, that's pretty much the only reason why I care about this game.
I was watching it with my uncle, and he's from PA, so he's a huge Philly fan, so I was forced to be nice to him, but
yeah,
that side, it was hurting me to do that.
I'm sure. It was amazing when Grant made that field goal, how silent the place went. It was like just like instantly silent. It was really bizarre.
You know, and the other thing I was thinking is how they shut down LeSean McCoy in the beginning of the game, and I think that really helped the Saints out too. But a lot of times it looks like when you see LeSean McCoy run, he loves to just kind of pick his own path and not follow the blockers half the time, it seems like. You know, and sometimes it works out for him, and other times, you know, he gets stymied like he did in the beginning of the game yesterday, but towards the end, he started getting some bigger runs. But if LeSean McCoy isn't being LeSean McCoy, which I don't think he really was yesterday, I think it's a lot harder for the Eagles to win.
Yeah, because I think
it's sort of surprising to see him struggle. I mean, this whole year, he's just been an absolute monster. And they brought up a comparison during the broadcast about looking like Barry Sanders, and I think that's a really apt comparison because he's just so shifty and can just accelerate on a dime. And he's actually pretty fun to watch, which kind of pains me to say, but
yeah.
Yeah, that run right near the goal line where he completely juked out the defense.
Yep.
He just like broke his ankles. It was actually, he just dove the wrong place. But yeah, it's amazing how he can change on a dime.
Yeah, and like we're saying with the Chiefs, that it's interesting. Like, you know, teams, more and more teams don't really feature the running back as much, but I think he really plays such a key component in Chip Kelly's offense that they're able to, you know, win the division, get to the playoffs. So maybe certain teams will be, you know, look to that and say, hey, the running back can still be a key factor in our offense now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One more thing that surprised me too is DeSean Jackson was a non-factor last night, and he has had an amazing year. So I don't know what was up with that. I guess they were just really concentrating on shutting him down.
Yeah, because other than that pass interference call that he drew, I don't remember him really doing too much of anything last night either.
Yeah.
No, I don't even think he had a catch in the first half. They said he caught those two passes in a row, drew that big PI, and then was sort of silent again.
Yeah, he had three catches for 53 yards, so that's not DeSean Jackson-esque.
No, not at all. Not at all. On the Saints' last drive, when they obviously, you know, got that last first down and were basically going to run the clock down to kick the field goal, did you guys think at all the Eagles should have considered trying to let the Saints score a touchdown just to get the ball back with some time left?
Absolutely. That thought popped in my mind immediately. Just because by that point, it seemed like they were having an easier time scoring.
Yeah.
So that definitely was a thought in my mind.
I don't know. Unless it's kind of extenuating circumstances, I'm a big defense guy, and I would just rather call up on your team to stop them as opposed to, you know, letting them essentially gain the lead for them to rely on your offense. I mean, if you're going to rely on one side versus the other, why not just put everything you have into making the stop?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think it was just, I think the killer was that once they got that last first down, it was like, oh, they're out of timeouts, and then it was like a matter of they had no chance. We said they would have had to stop them, but yeah, they just were in a spot where it was either let them score or they're going to run the clock down to 4 seconds, get the field goal. And it was funny, part of me also, I was like, man, I don't know why. I always get nervous if I'm not obviously a Saints fan, but when like the Saints kind of strategize to kick that field goal, I always feel kind of nervous when your team sets it up for just that one play, because if it messes up, the game's over, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I always get nervous when I see teams just say, oh, we're just going to basically play for this last second field goal. I don't know. I just feel like you should give yourself a little bit of margin for error or something like that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I know the kickers say it doesn't bother them at the last second, but and they go through the motions 1,000 times
yeah.
a week. But, God, that's got to be just the most nerve-wracking thing ever. Just like you said, you make it, you win, you shank it, game over, you lose, and you go home.
Yep, there's no – it's one or the other. That's why I thought maybe they would maybe try on a third down or something like that, but, like, nope, they are going to just, you know, run to 3 seconds, and that was that. It was either – kick it or season's over, but there was no doubt it was a good kick.
So I was
happy that we got two good games yesterday, and today, you know, first game, Chargers travel to Cincinnati. Do you think the Chargers have a shot in this one?
I guess we'll see what Philip Rivers is really made of. I mean, he's had a pretty good year so far, stats-wise, but the Chargers seem to be sort of an enigma. I mean, sometimes they look like world beaters, and other times it's just the regular San Diego Chargers that always seem to blow it somehow. So I think Cincinnati's the real deal. A.J. Green is incredibly fun to watch, and when Dalton is on, I mean, look out. So
yeah.
I think those two are going to be the key to this game, and I think Cincy will take it, and they'll move to the next round.
Yeah, but like you just said, Dave, I think the Bengals are a pretty similar team. They can show up to play and be amazing 1 week and then suck the other week. So, but I do agree with you. It really just boils down to does Dalton show up, you know? Because he's had some ridiculous games, but then he's also showed up and thrown for 150 yards and a couple picks.
Right.
Yeah, because I think the thing I was thinking about was for this game, it's who's going to show up, the Chargers team that, you know, went into Denver and won on that Thursday night, or it's going to be the Chargers team that barely beat KC's second string last week. You know, it's just, you never know who's going to show up for the Chargers.
Yeah,
that was crazy that, you know, they Chargers had the win and you're in against the second string, and it was a battle the entire game.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, how does that happen?
Yeah. Other than the West Coast Cowboys, they just consistently underperform when you think they're a really good team.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, they got talented players, but they just always seem to just underachieve. And because they should have lost that game last week. I mean, if Suckup makes that kick, that's it. And like from what I heard throughout the week, that they should have got a second chance to kick it because the Chargers were lined up illegally. So they really should be out of the playoffs. But so yeah, that's why I said I'm just not sure. And I just think it's going to be kind of chilly out, and I think just kind of, and the Bengals, I don't think they've lost at home yet this year, so I think the tie kind of tilts their way a little bit.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. So I see the Chargers winning that game, but, or excuse me, the Bengals, I think they'll pull it out today just based on how they've played at home so far this year. But one thing I heard, I couldn't believe it, that Marvin Lewis, his 11 years with the Bengals, they've never won a playoff game with him as coach in 11 years. Isn't that crazy?
That is real.
That doesn't even make sense.
I know.
Maybe it's time, you know?
Yeah. This could be it. This could definitely be it. And then the game I'm glad I'm going to be at home and not there is Niners-Packers. I hear that's going to be – could get down to like 0 degrees at game time, so I'm glad I'm not going to be out there for that. That just sounds miserable. You know, the Packers, they had to win it in last week, but how do you guys feel about the Niners going into Green Bay?
I honestly can't wait to watch this game.
Yeah.
First of all, I think it's a great matchup, and second of all, I cannot even imagine playing in temperature like that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
As a fan, when they were talking about the game being blacked out and they're trying to get people to, you know, snatch up tickets to go to the game, you would have to pay me several thousand dollars to attend that game.
Yeah.
There's no chance I'm sitting in a place where with the wind chill, it's like negative 20 or 30 or whatever they said. I even think I read one thing earlier a couple days ago that said the feels like temperature could be minus 51 at points during.
Yep.
Yeah, that's absolutely insane. I mean, I don't even know why they haven't considered canceling.
I mean, can't you die?
Yeah, I don't know, but that's borderline torture.
That is, I mean, there's pretty much only one sporting event that I would even consider that for, and that's if Penn State got to the national championship. And even then,
you'd be bare-chested. Loving every second of it.
That's probably true.
Because I know people were like, oh, how can they, this is Green Bay, they're supposed to be the best fans, how can they have tickets left of it? I mean, I'm thinking they probably don't want, it's free, it's going to be freezing. I know that they've suffered this before, but I wasn't totally shocked that they were still having a tough time selling tickets, because that just sounded like a miserable atmosphere to watch a game in. So I wasn't that shocked that they were having a tough time selling out the game.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a line in fandom, and I'm sure Green Bay fans are willing to attend games that are at zero, minus five, way more so than, say, like, I don't know, the Dolphins fans or something like that. But once you start getting to negative 20, 30, 40, I mean, look, that, you can't hold that against them if they don't end up showing up, because that's insane.
Yeah, and the fact that they were threatening to black out the game is absolutely ludicrous.
I agree. I think if it had come down to it, they probably would not have ended up doing it. I think they would have lifted the blackout restrictions, or the league would have bought something. They would not have blacked out the game, is my guess.
Yeah, I understand the blackout rules, why they're in place for like the regular season games, but the playoffs, come on, man. You cannot black out
your home team's playoff game.
Right.
What the heck?
Right.
Yeah, you can't do that. How do you guys feel as far as who's going to win it? You think the Niners take care of business here, or do you think the Packers have a shot?
I'm going to say Niners. I think they have the pieces. I mean, they've been sort of wishy-washy the whole year. Not obviously as good as they were last year, but it seems like their defense is crazy. They got all the weapons that they need on offense, especially now that Crabtree is back, and they got Crabtree, Bolden, Vernon Davis, Frank Gore, I mean, all those guys.
Yeah.
And you got Kaepernick that can run it too. So, I mean, I think the firepower that they have is going to be too much to overcome for Green Bay.
Yeah, I think on paper, San Francisco 100 times out of 100, but you're playing in negative 30-degree weather, you know. But just, I think it completely levels the playing field with Green Bay, because out of any team, they're obviously going to be the best prepared for a situation like that.
Yep.
Kind of rebut your point, Dave. Kaepernick actually has had a pretty bad year, so
right.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if he shows up and is the Kaepernick we know he can be.
Yeah, Mike, I like that point you made about the temperature is kind of level in the playing field, because I think it's going to come down to who's able to tough it out more. Yeah.
Yeah, so who's the tougher team? And San Francisco seems like a pretty tough team, but it's easy to play in sunny 75-degree weather every weekend.
Yeah, so that's why you always got to be concerned about teams playing on the West Coast coming into an environment like that. So that could really this could be one of the few low scoring games we see in the league this year.
I just hope they're as good as yesterday, and both of them come down to last second plays.
I agree. Yeah, we were very fortunate last night that both games were both competitive and went down to the wire. So hopefully today's games follow suit.
Yeah, I saw that stat pop up at the end of last night's game. They said it was the first time in playoff history that two games in a row were separated by 2 points or less.
Yeah. Wow. That was awesome.
Hopefully we can get another day like that.
Yes, I hope so too. It'll be a good way to wrap up the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And before we move to college, fear you guys are both Skins fans and you lost your coach this week. I was wondering what your guys' overall thoughts were about Mike Shanahan getting fired. And I mean, it seemed like that, from my part, I don't think anyone was like shocked or anything, but what were your guys' thoughts about Mike Shanahan being fired by the Redskins?
At first when this all started happening, and then it started eventually leaking out that apparently it looks like Shanahan didn't want RG3 to begin with, and this was a whole other Dan Snyder play, which I kind of firmly believe, and it seems like RG3 was soaking up the VIP treatment by Dan Snyder.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't change his tune, he's pretty much going to screw himself in the locker room, too. Living in Baltimore now and seeing a franchise that is run appropriately and making the right moves. I didn't really get angry at Shanahan or anybody else. It just made me much more bitter with Dan Snyder.
I don't really have a problem with Snyder. I mean, I feel like in recent years, he's sort of steered clear. I feel like 3, 4, 5-plus years ago, he had his hand in everything, and he was always in the news. I feel like he's at least sort of recognized that he needs to let the decision-makers make the decisions, like the GM, like the Allens of the world. But then also, I mean, I appreciate the fact that he at least tries. I mean, you look at a guy like Angelos, the O's owner, he doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
He lets the top talent leave. He always says they're rebuilding. I mean, we've been rebuilding for 15 years now. So, I mean, at some point, you recognize that you've just given up. Yeah, so
apparently, I mean, his head coach is saying, listen, I don't want an RG3 type guy. And Dan Snyder's like, I don't care. But that's who I want, and that's who we're getting. You know, I mean, you gotta, I don't know. I just, at what point do you let your head coach be a head coach, your general manager, you know, pick the personnel?
I guess that's a pretty fine line to walk then.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's difficult, and it's just, you know, from the bitter taste in my mouth that I've had from the man for all the previous years, and I honestly, like, time and time again, you just hear how bad of a person he is. When it comes to the business side of things, too, he's just apparently a huge dick. So it just made me a little bit more bitter. And honestly, since Nowski was fired, like, I haven't heard anything about what's going to happen in the future other than, you know, Bruce Allen's in charge of looking for a coach. But as far as head coach possibilities, all I'm hearing is rehashes of old head coaches that haven't done anything in the league. So I don't know. I think it's a bad, bad head coaching market right now, and I have no clue what the Redskins are going to do.
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys if you guys had not necessarily an individual, but the kind of coach you'd like to see come in. Would you like to see an upstart, someone from college level, or is there someone else you had in mind? Like, what would you guys think would work best? Or who would you like to see kind of come in and take over the team?
I mean, being perfectly honest, at this point, I don't really care. I feel like they've tried the Spurriers, they've tried the Shanahans, they've tried bringing back Gibbs. I mean, they've tried all the different, every type of coach that they can bring in, and everyone has failed. So, I mean, it's just sort of like a roll of the dice at this point. Is a guy going to come in just from the college ranks, like a Franklin out of Vanderbilt that's to be mentioned, or at least going to try an interview with the Skins? Is it one of those guys, or is it going to be a guy that, like, one of the assistants from Dallas that they just looked at, or just an assistant coach that seems to be doing pretty well? Who knows? I mean, really, it seems like you try and predict these things and you get a hire that you really like, and then it falls through and you're kind of sitting there thinking, well, what could we have done differently? But turns out it's just the way it's going to be. So
yeah,
I feel like they're going to make their decision and it's going to be what it is. And he'll get fired 3 down the road when we miss 3 straight playoffs. And that's that.
Yeah.
I think there's 2 things for me. One thing, I don't want any of the names of, like, you know, the old head coaches, the Wizenhunt, the Wade Phillips of the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't think that's the way to go. So I'm with Dave. I'd love, like, you know, a hot assistant that looks like he could be a good head coach. And I think it's really simple. I mean, they've invested everything in RG3, so we just need somebody that can work with him and make him a winner. I mean, I think that's what has to happen. And if we don't have that, then, you know, we've just shot ourselves in the foot for another 5 years, because then we're going to have to wait to get another quarterback back and basically wipe the slate clean and do it all over again.
Yeah, it's a thing. You don't want to keep. I feel like the Skins, I feel like they keep restart and stop. They just need to find someone who they can just kind of hopefully just roll with for a while, because it just sets your franchise back when you have to keep restarting like this.
Well, it's sort of like a catch-22 in that situation, and it's like this with all college head coaches and everything too. I mean, how much time do you give a guy, or when do you actually pull the cord? You know, when is it?
Yeah.
You need to give him more time. Even though that you're losing right now because you believe in him. And then when do you finally say, you know what, we've kept losing and losing, it's time to pull the plug? It was sort of like Boudreaux with the Caps too. I mean, mm-hmm. They were killing it. it still sort of seems like a dicey decision to let him loose, considering Anna seems to be doing pretty well lately. But it's just, you kind of get caught up and you just get tired of losing, and then you just need to make a decision. And it seems a very, very unpopular decision when you keep guys in charge when your team is, when your team continues to lose.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
All I know is it's been 20 years since we've had a winning team, and I'm just getting kind of sick of it.
Right, hence why they're going to, you know, if they hired a high school coach, I'd be like, well, that's something new. Why not? Yeah.
That would be something. Yeah, right from high school to the pros. That'll be really interesting. And I guess we'll move into college and might as well stick with the coaching thing. Another, you guys, I was talking to Mike about this. You guys, what a roller coaster week losing two coaches, in the same time span there with Bill O'Brien leaving Penn State. Were you guys just totally shocked by this, or did you expect him to eventually go into the NFL, but just not so soon? What were your guys' initial thoughts when you saw that he was being groomed for the NFL again?
Oh, bitterness, a lot of bitterness. Yeah. And honestly, after this, after the last 2 to 3 years of what Penn State's gone through, the skins are the skins, I'm done. I can never be shocked again. I'm just numb to it all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of with you, Mike. I mean, you would think me of all people, I would be beside myself with something like this. But, I mean, honestly, first of all, I expected it. I didn't expect it this year, of course, especially after he bargained for lowering his buyout and getting other favorable things. He got a raise and an extension earlier in the year. So just sort of things that seemed like, I mean, obviously lowering the buyout sort of writing on the wall, but just sort of seemed like that's what he wanted to make him happy. So Penn State said, okay, well, we'll do that. So it sort of seemed like both parties were okay with the situation. I certainly expected him to leave, but I thought it would be 2 years from now when Hackenberg's college career is done. I think he sort of came in with a mission. He got a guy like Hackenberg, who he seemed to have a very good rapport with, and his family. And it just sort of seemed like he was going to stick it out through his tenure. And then it would not have surprised me whatsoever if he had left. But he's always said he's a college coach. You know, he said many times that, I'm sorry, he's always been an NFL coach, and that the NFL is the pinnacle of football, and that's where he wants to be, and so on and so forth. But, you know, just it's just very ironic and hypocritical when you preach loyalty and team unity and all that kind of stuff. And then he even had a quote in September that said, you know, if you're not a man of your word, then who are you? And this is just after signing an extension and getting a raise. I mean, what is that? I mean, just like Mike said, it doesn't really surprise me. I mean, you really – and it's unfortunate because you like guys – players and coaches, you feel like they're a part of your family essentially, and then when something like this happens, it's kind of like it's disappointing. So,
yeah. And
that's really what it goes down to.
And I'm kind of torn just to how to think about him, because I don't think there's many humans on the planet that can come into a situation like he did and do what he did. So you know what he did while he was here, I think he did a really good job, especially just with the media and kind of turning the perception of Penn State around a little bit. Dave, I wanted to get your thoughts on this, because I read a couple articles, and it seemed like the politics eventually, you know, had a play in O'Brien's decision, too, and the old Joe Pa faithful.
Oh, I saw that.
Him just kind of banging his head against the wall, and you know, since he kind of wasn't a Penn State guy dealing with tradition and the politics, do you think that had a big play in his decision?
I mean, to be perfectly honest, I really don't. I mean, obviously, I don't know the ins and outs of O'Brien's daily life and who he hears from and who he gets criticized by and that sort of thing. I can certainly understand the Joe loyalists that are, you know, beating him up over every little thing that's not exactly the way it was. Yeah. And, well, first of all, shame on those people that do that, because, look, I mean, what you think of Joe is what you think of Joe, but the past is the past at this point. I mean, yeah. I would love to hold on to tradition and sort of and those sort of things, but you got to give the head coach, the current head coach, you know, his due. You got to let him do what he thinks is best for the squad. And if people were constantly nitpicking him left and right over every little thing, I could see how that would weigh on you. But at the same time, you're a head coach. I mean, you got to expect things like that, especially coming into a situation where you're following a guy like Joe Paterno. I mean, you got to know that there's going to be a faction of fans that don't want any single thing different than the way it was when Joe was there. And that's just a fact of the matter. So, to your point about to your question about him kind of butting heads with the admin, that doesn't surprise me, because Penn State's leadership has just been one train wreck after another. Every bad decision you can make, they've somehow made it worse. And I mean, being an employee and having a terrible boss is certainly put you in a precarious position. So I can understand why he would jump at the idea to leave to the NFL. But to say it's once in a lifetime opportunity for him is kind of comical to me, considering there's half a dozen NFL coaching changes every year.
Every year, yep.
So, just, I mean, you know, you're going to have the Lions, the Texans, the Redskins, you know, those sort of teams that are, I mean, I think the Texans are good in the fact that I don't think they're a two-win team or whatever they were, three-win team.
Yeah.
I think that they should have been better than that. And the fact that they have a number one pick, I think it sort of puts them in a good position. But,
yeah.
I mean, I really don't think that it's something where that you could consider calling it once in a lifetime.
Yeah, I agree. And then, you know, back to what we talked about, you know, technically last year is going to be the worst situation they have when it limited scholarships and stuff. So I don't see anything but Penn State. I mean, next year could be pretty bad, maybe the worst possible season. But from there, it's just going to get better. And it just seemed like him and Hackenberg had such a great relationship. And God only knows what he's told that kid behind doors. Like, just that alone, like the recruits and all the connections he made through that really, really hard time, I don't think as a person that I could go back on my word and at least stick with those guys till I saw them graduate.
Yeah, yep.
That, I mean, that's the problem with collegiate coaching. No matter when you leave, you're going to be abandoning some of your recruits. I mean, that's just the fact of the matter. But just exactly to your point, it very much surprised me that he did not stick with his first class. Because then if you see that first class through, it's kind of like, okay, look, Penn State, I helped you guys weather the storm. Hopefully you think you're in a better position than you are when I started, which is certainly true even now, 2 years later. But I don't even if you have a bad boss, how can you not stick around when you have a bond with the guys that you constantly preached over and over again that he just loved those kids so much? Just stay there for another year or two. I mean, is that really that difficult to do?
Yeah. Exactly. And yeah, I totally understand. You're definitely going to, when you're a college coach, you're going to make someone unhappy. But I just keep on thinking to myself, I can't imagine what it was like in those locker rooms when those sanctions came out and you've got a bunch of 16-year-old kids and you've convinced them to go to this university. I mean, you probably said some pretty hardcore stuff. And I feel like you just got to stick it out with that class.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But in regards to the new search, I just read that Munchak, the recently fired coach in the Titans, will be interviewing today along with Franklin from Vanderbilt. So what do you guys think about hiring a guy that only has NFL experience like Munchak or hiring a guy that has only been in the collegiate ranks like Franklin?
Yeah, I just saw the Munchak thing to scroll across my. I got ESPN. I saw that scroll across. For me, with the only thing with a guy who's only been to NFL, I just feel like they don't have the whole recruiting thing down. You know, that's the only thing I can think about. Is I'd almost rather have someone who knows a little bit about college, because that's a big part of college coaching, isn't it? Being able to recruit kids.
Oh yeah, I mean that's half the job. If
yeah,
not more.
It's
yep.
Huge. I mean, luckily, if you're a new coach coming to a situation like Penn State, you know, the head coach isn't the only one doing the recruiting. So
yeah.
They have some people there that have been recruiting for a while that can help him out. But, yeah, I think the recruiting's a huge thing. And I think, you know, just the way you relate to your players. You know, in the NFL, you know, I feel like the locker room, it's kind of run like a business, you know, where
yep.
When you're running college teams – you're dealing with relationships, you're dealing with guys that are, you know, growing up as men, and it's just a completely different circumstance. And I think you've got to be able to approach players completely different in the college games. You know, not every young kid reacts to leadership the same way, so you got to be able to change your style of management, whereas in the NFL, I feel like you can be a little bit more militant because these guys are getting paid millions of bucks.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it was, I think Tony Dungy said the big difference is in college you're dealing with kids, whereas in NFL you're dealing with 25-year-old millionaires. It's a totally different thing. It's a big difference there. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I don't really understand the fascination with some Penn State fans of no matter what, they just want a guy that has Penn State ties, like the Munchaks of the world. Whereas that, to me, that hire makes zero sense. But
yeah.
I mean, the O'Brien hire, I think, was great because, just like Mike said, the things that he did off the field, I mean, that really couldn't be matched by anybody. But I thought, if I, you know, revisionist history, if I could look back, I would have thought that the O'Brien hire should have been a Penn Stater, and then this guy should be open up to everybody, because I would have felt that, you know, hiring a Penn Stater right after Paterno and all the mess that went down would have been a better ease for everybody to kind of
you
know, wean themselves off of the old way of things. And now that we've already done that, what's the fascination with getting a Golden or a Munchak or somebody that played at Penn State? I mean, if they get hired, that's great. If they're qualified and everything works out well, fine. But if they're not, I mean, don't turn down a Franklin just because he doesn't have any Penn State ties. That's crazy.
Yeah,
exactly. And that's why I brought that question up earlier, is because I'm wondering if O'Brien was a Penn State guy, it'd be interesting to go back 2 years and then see if O'Brien was in the same place now, because he would just have a better understanding of, you know, how the hardcore Joe Paterno faithful act and kind of the politics and the behind-the-scenes stuff that he was getting into.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. I know that job search should be another interesting one. I feel bad that they're going to have to go. They just went through this 2 years ago, and they're going to go through it again. It's definitely unfortunate.
Sports life.
Yeah, it is true. Yes, and also on the college front, I was just wondering, you guys, which of the a lot of bowl games going on? What bowl games have you guys have enjoyed or sparked your interest so far in this bowl season?
This is Dave's territory, because I'm going to be straight up honest. I haven't watched many. I watched the Ohio State game with them, and it was good to see them lose. And other than that, I haven't watched much.
I thought it's been an interesting bowl season. I mean, you've had some really big name teams go down. I mean, you have upsets, of course, all the time. But Ohio State was a big favorite. Bama was a big favorite. Baylor was a big favorite. I think Texas Tech upset Arizona State early on in the season too, and it's sort of uncharacteristic to have a lot of, you know, double digit spread favorite teams kind of lose. Especially, I did not expect the Alabama team to lose to Oklahoma for sure. But I mean, UCF is good. They got that quarterback Bortles, and he took it to Baylor, and they were just kind of slinging it back and forth. That was a fun game to watch. But I get sort of frustrated with the bowl season when you got. I mean, I know you can't compete with the NFL, but you got a bowl tonight in between. You know, the national championship is tomorrow, but
yeah,
I think it's Arkansas State and Ball State.
Yeah, it is, and it's at 9 o'clock tonight.
Who's watching that?
I don't know who is watching that. It's a great question.
The parents of the players, and that's about it.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd like to bring up is, did the Big Ten win only one bowl? Is Michigan State the only one that won? Nebraska won a game, too. But the Big Ten didn't do so hot in the bowl season, did it?
No, they actually looked terrible, which is not really all that surprising. Yeah. But, I mean, they looked really, really bad. I mean, Minnesota lost to Syracuse, which was terrible. Yeah, I mean, they're just – Big Ten's just not good. I mean, that's just the fact of the matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a question I had for you guys. I saw this brought up with the Michigan State game. Who would you guys say is, like – who's, like, your guys' big in-conference rival, you'd say?
Man, that's tough. I mean, they try and force, like, the Ohio State's on us and the Michigan's on us. And while I really much despise those teams, I mean – the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry is second to none. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't beat that.
No, and then they started doing we would play Michigan State at the end of every year, and that started to get pretty good. And now it seems like they're trying to get us and Nebraska to be rivals, because Nebraska doesn't have any real rivals in the Big Ten because they're so new. Yeah. So I thought that was kind of an interesting twist, because we're both the two newest teams in the Big Ten. Well, I guess other than Rutgers and Maryland now, but I would much rather have a big-name team like Nebraska try and be our rival than if they try and force Rutgers or Maryland. That's just going to be so stupid.
Yeah, I hate that. I really hope the Nebraska-Penn State thing keeps on. Dave, have you looked at the schedule? Do you know if we're going to keep on playing them every year?
I don't remember who our anchored teams are from the other division. You know, you play every team from your division, and then there's some sort of rotation, and I think there's one or two that you play every year. I don't remember if Nebraska.
I know Nebraska was our anchor team, but that was before Maryland and Rutgers joined. So I don't know how that has screwed everything up. But before then, Nebraska, you know, 40, 50 years from now, could have been an amazing rivalry. That's what I hope happens. I feel like the – for a while there, Iowa, out of all teams, seemed like we would go back and forth with them a lot. And then the Michigan State, obviously, they forced that on us. Like, the it was always the last game of the year before the Big Ten realigned and everything. And they do a huge blood draw at each school and all this crazy stuff. And you were thinking Michigan State, oh, that's not a big deal. But those games actually usually were pretty entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah, the reason I ask, because I was wondering, like, when it comes down to, like, the bowl season, could you see yourself, like, rooting for, like, a big rival just so that the Big Ten wins that bowl game? I don't know how you guys feel about that.
No, never. I have a lot of vitriol in my fandom, and I can't bring it in myself to root for any other Big Ten team, especially after the Big Ten just took a dump all over us a couple years ago. And it seemed like they never really wanted us in the Big Ten in the first place. So my train of thought is, well, then I don't want to be here anyway. So we might as well just lose every bowl game just to make it a laughing matter. So I get a lot of entertainment out of spite and things like that. So I'm probably not the best person to ask that question, but to answer your question, I want every Big Ten team to lose.
Gotcha. Kind of some people kind of like, oh, Big Ten pride. They want to see the Big Ten teams play well, you know, in those situations. So I was curious how you guys feel about that. Okay. Makes sense to me.
The mid-tier to lower tier level teams really don't bother me if they win or lose. Maybe I'd actually probably be more inclined to, you know, root for a Minnesota or an Iowa. But, you know, the top teams, the Ohio State and Michigan – in Nebraska, probably. I don't think I'd find myself ever really rooting for them.
Gotcha. And then also, just other question I had, just for college football, tomorrow's title game, do you guys think Florida State has a chance to end the SEC's reign over the title? I think it's like 7 in a row for the SEC title games, or?
Yeah.
I mean, they you can't really argue with their product so far this year. I mean, I guess you could say that they haven't really played anybody, you know, worth anything too much lately, but they have, it's one thing to beat bad teams. It's another thing to just completely annihilate them.
Yeah, that's true.
And every facet of the game, their defense is ridiculous. Their offense is ridiculous. I mean, they just, how would you possibly game plan against them? But kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, Auburn just seems like that team of destiny, man. That, the Hail Mary that they beat Georgia with, that kick ball,
yep,
that was awesome. Then you had the kick return against Bama. That was, I mean, I wasn't even an Auburn fan, and I was jumping up and down watching that game. I mean, that was
fantastic.
Fun to watch.
I agree.
Yeah. I think Florida State wins just because, I mean, if you look at the big picture, Auburn has had some shaky times beating some of the better teams.
Yep.
And Florida State has just absolutely destroyed everything in its path. And I being a fan of football and seeing, and especially guys like, you know, Tiger Woods, when he goes on a tear, I love seeing teams and people perform at kind of unrealistic expectations. And I think that if Florida State just crushed Auburn, I think that would be a pretty cool special season for them.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like seeing excellent teams or individual. I love seeing excellence at its best, Tom. I'm with you on that, Dave. I like that. I like to see that too. So yeah, hopefully they'll hopefully
actually,
be a good game.
One of my running buddies, he graduated from Florida State. The instant he found out that they were in the game, he booked a ticket, and he just told me that he's in Pasadena now, and he's
nice.
Seeing all the pictures of the Rose Bowl. He's getting all pumped up, and he's a big of Florida State fan as Mike and I are of Penn State. So I know he is just as nervous as we would be, and I think that sort of has, I guess, my heart in it for him a little bit.
Gotcha.
I met him. He's a good guy, so hopefully they win.
Yeah,
and I'm sick of the SEC winning everything.
Yeah, so it'd be good if they can shake things up a little bit.
Isn't that crazy to think, like, in the beginning of the 2000s, the ACC, like, was the greatest conference in the world, and now the tides have changed. I guess it's whatever conference is willing to cheat more.
Yeah, well, did you see Barry Switzer had a quote the other day about he said something – I forget how it came up, but he said he hadn't had that much money on him since his recruiting days. And it was just basically kind of like a thing that, I mean, it's just glad handing recruits and slipping them a couple $100 when you need to. I mean, that stuff goes on everywhere. I mean, you know it does. It's just, it's such a shady business, and it sucks because it's sort of the opposite of what you think of when you think of college athletics. But
yeah,
I guess you're right, Mike. It just, whoever wants to cheat more.
Yeah. You ain't cheating, you ain't trying, right?
SMU proved it, man.
Yeah.
SMU of all places was amazing. Look what they were doing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I never did watch that. They did a 30 for 30 on them, didn't they? The Pony Express.
Yeah. It was fascinating.
I gotta go back and watch that one. I heard it was really good. I'll have to check that one out. I know they always they replay them on ESPN all the time. So that's good stuff. And then I guess before we close out, before the game start, Mike, I know you experienced some breweries when you went out west last week, correct?
Yeah.
If you want to take us home with your
San Diego for a week. And
beer blast, yeah.
It just reminded me how amazing West Coast IPAs and beers are. I had a chance to go to this bar downtown called The Neighborhood. It's a pretty popular beer bar in the beer world. And pretty much just drank all West Coast beers. Alesmith Brewing out there, they make some excellent beer. Had a couple beers from Craftsman Brewing Company. They had, a couple of holiday beers out there. And then I went and did a little tasting, went to the tasting room of Mission Brewery. And I was actually really excited about going there, but pretty disappointed in their beer. It was just so. I think I had two that were really good. One of them was their double IPA, and then they had a holiday seasonal that was pretty good, but the rest of them were just kind of blah. So that was probably the most disappointing part of it all. But any beer that is brewed on the West Coast that's doing an IPA is usually pretty darn solid. And then I just want to give props again to Of Love and Regret is a little bar a couple blocks away from where I live in Baltimore. Dave and I went there actually earlier on this week, and they always have amazing beer on tap, and it's usually a lot of foreign beer, and then his beer is obviously, it's called Stillwater, just makes a ton of great beer. So if you see any Stillwater on the shelves, definitely pick that up, and definitely search out any West Coast IPAs if you have a chance at your local craft brew store.
Well, Mike, I want to add, I stumbled across a website this week. It's called seekabrew.com. And it's just basically a map of the U.S., and you can choose a brewery and any brewery that you want, and it will tell you what states it distributes to. You can compare, if you're looking for, what do they get in New York and not in Maryland? You can filter by state and all that sort of thing. So it's actually a really cool tool. Like if you have a buddy, like my brother-in-law lives right near Northern Virginia. And if I say, oh, well, there's some brewery that distributes to Virginia and not Maryland, go pick me up a six pack of this. I mean, it's just as easy to see who does what. And it's a pretty cool site just to tool around with.
Yeah, it is really cool. The only thing disappointing about it is that it did look and their spreadsheet was last updated in October. So yeah. I wish they would do it more, because that's actually a really cool concept. Maybe we can take the idea and make it better. That would be our business venture.
There you go.
I like it.
But yeah, it's a really cool tool, and it's definitely worth checking out.
Good stuff. Are you guys enjoying any particular brews while you watch the games today, or just?
I don't think I'm drinking today.
Yeah.
I might have maybe one beer, but I did my fair share last week.
Gotcha. I understand. Yeah, I'll probably be going with just iced tea and soda pop today myself.
Although it's nice and cold outside, one brew wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, what the heck?
Did you go to the gym this morning?
Absolutely. Well, just kidding.
I was gonna say, if you had actually done it, then you can actually justify having a beer or two. But now you gotta stick with the water train, man.
I barely slept last night. Our relatives came over. They went to Disney, so we had to wake up really early and take them to the airport, but I couldn't sleep, so I was up to like 2 in the morning just watching Spartacus and playing video games.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, needless to say, that didn't go over. And it was pretty, it was like rainy and icy this morning, too. I had no idea it was going to rain all day.
You're basically making excuses at this point, because I went for a 6-mile run outside and it was perfectly fine.
Yeah. No, my excuse is I didn't sleep. I definitely should have gone to the gym.
Yeah, you should have.
We still got it. You got all week. It's all right. It's all right.
It's not all right. It really is.
Oh, boy. Well, guys, this
yeah, man, we'll have fun watching the game.
Absolutely. This has been good. Yeah. Dave, thanks for joining us. It was a pleasure having you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
Absolutely. So, yeah, as always, you can reach us on Twitter at the GD Podcast. Shoot us an email at the GD Podcast at gmail.com. For Dave Kaufman and Mike Grant, I'm Joe Dighton. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time.